Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Right, lads, I'm fucking so giddy. I'm so fucking giddy because I tell you what, we didn't record the last 2 weeks and we didn't record the last 2 weeks because of circumstance. And I have been itching for cans on Zoom. Fucking itching.
Something you've been itching for.
Yeah. I mean, I'm itching for a pint too, but we'll get on to that later on. But I'm giddy because it's a fucking Friday evening. I have some lovely cans. We went can shopping at lunchtime today and we got a few treats. And it's just fucking, life is good, man. Life is good today. There are people enjoying a pint in the pub. I'm enjoying a delicious can that I bought on my lunch today. And I've got some fucking great people in front of me in Zoom on a Friday night, on the Zoom. Owen, you're here as well, but we're privileged this week. We've got Wayne and Janice Dunn from the Irish Beer Snob blog and podcast joining us. I'd say, Wayne, we're in negotiations with 2 years, are we?
Yeah, you finally satisfied the rider, so... it's all good, but we actually missed each other last year in November when we were down in Waterford, or it was probably late summer, August, September maybe. We were hoping to catch up for a pint at that time, but sadly our diaries didn't align at that stage.
Yeah, I think we were away at a festival, I fucking wish. We were away at a work conference or something that weekend. It was just really unfortunate timing, but long overdue. And
absolutely.
Lads, I can't get the fucking smile off my face because I'm really enjoying the can today. Do you know what? I don't know what the weather is like up there in Meath, guys, but it's a miserable, blustery, wintry old day here. So when we went to buy the cans today, I was like, fuck this, I'm going on the stout. So I'm feeling, I feel very homely and warm drinking stout in my warm house, looking out at the rain and the miserable wind.
It's definitely a stouter, all right. Like it's coming in, that kind of, that cool, crisp winter breeze is blowing along there. And yeah, you just kind of want to be warmed up by a nice stout there tonight. Maybe even a little bit of a coffee stout or something, just to kind of get you going, perking you up as well, I suppose.
I mean, who the fuck calls it the sunny southeast? Because it's not today anyway. But lads, you're so fucking welcome to the podcast. It's a delight to have you on. Janice, how's the last couple of months been for you?
Yeah, very, very interesting. Yeah, I've been lucky enough where I've been able to work through it. So I've been in and out of my job. I work for a jewellery store here in Avon. And, but when he was away, Jesus, starfishing in the bed, drinking all the beer he can't. It was great.
That's great.
That's what you want.
Selling the negative side of that.
But I did actually say to you last night, didn't I say to you, oh, Jesus, I love having you home, but I miss the treats that you bring.
Yeah.
Like, how are we supposed to get our caterpillars out and all the magic rock beers?
We can work on that.
And the donuts from Morrison's are a bit...
Hold on. We need to dive into this a little bit more. What are these treats and what's going on here?
And why haven't we got any?
Because postage is prohibitively expensive. But yeah, so I was working in financial services. I'm working in financial services, but for a brief
period. Boring.
News.
Well, for a brief period of time, I was doing subcontracting work for DHL, which meant I was going back and forward to the UK two or three times a week. So I'd be going in via Holyhead in Wales. Now, if you, like supermarkets in the UK, they're almost trying to outdo each other in terms of their range of craft beer. So Morrison's will bring out, oh, we've got all these unique to us craft beers. Tesco will bring out, oh, I've got all these unique to us craft beers and so on. So literally in Holyhead, I just stop on the way back and pick up a few random beers. So
they're now unique to our fridge.
Which, quite a lot of them, like on the basis of, I can't get this back in Ireland. No. So I'm going to buy myself a large can of Magic Rock Cannonball, which is a 7.something% West Coast IPA from a brewery based in West Yorkshire, where I lived a lot, where I lived for a while when I was a kid. Things like some of the Brewdog and Modern Times collaborations. And my particular favorite, and I just love it, as lager is a very underrated style, but it's by a brewery from Bristol called Lost and Grounded, and they make a beer called Keller Pills. And
he won't shut up about it.
It's just absolutely fucking savage. It's just great. I'm on a quest to find an Irish replacement for Keller Pills.
You
in
did
the fridge.
Find one.
Well, I did. And that's the Dewdrop Inn Hells.
Oh, yeah.
Is as close as I've got. It's probably slightly different style-wise, but in terms of ticking the boxes of crisp and refreshing, nice low ABV, would I crush 6 or 8 cans of this on a sunny Saturday evening at a barbecue? Absolutely.
Beautiful. Because Owen, you were mad looking for a lager today. Like you said, like you wanted a stout, but you on the 5 for 16, you were like, I've got these cans of stout now. Where's my fucking lager?
Yeah, I don't know. I think just, and I think it's kind of maybe reflective of the like virtual, I was at the last virtual beer festival there. And it's, you know, it's just stock full of IPAs and stuff. And I love them. Don't get me wrong. I love them. But like lagers, there's something just a bit more crisp or something about a lager as well. That like, it's just a kind of a change up for the books as well. So yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely a mood based drinker anyway. And, just today, that kind of like Christmas lager is exactly what I wanted. And DJ, you had one kind of picked out for me there. Did I end up getting it?
I can't remember. I can't even remember.
It was a haze of drinks there that we had. That selection was incredible. And I just kept going back and forth between the two, or like several of them. So I actually didn't even know what I got in the end.
We picked up 13 cans between the two of us, and it was a bit like fucking child in a candy shop, like
candy shop.
Yeah, literally.
Yes.
is that the episode title?
That is the title right there. Nailed it.
I just want to redo 50 Cent's candy shop now.
Yeah, that's what he really meant.
Yeah, absolutely. But I was just going to say, like, it's one of those where so many appeal to me. I actually don't even know what we actually bought. And I put them in the fridge earlier, and I'm still not sure what I have in the fridge, because I looked at so many beers. And actually, like speaking of podcast episode titles, the cans on a plinth, we went into Worldwide Wines that I hadn't been in since lockdown on our lunch there. Shout out to Worldwide Wines. And literally the plinth was the off-license equivalent of walking into Grady's Yard and seeing all the labels lit up along the bar. This plinth was basically that, but with cans. It was just so inviting. And this is the thing, part of what I love about independent craft beer is the fucking cans, the artistry on the labels, the inviting nature of them all. Like the fucking cans themselves tell a story. And it's like, it draws me in. And I'm literally, right, you want to see what the beer is about and all that, but like, I'm like, ooh, that's a nice label over there. like it's almost like someone with fucking ADHD being like, no, shine your better thing over here. So I just think that like, in fairness, to gain a bigger market share, they have to stand out, but the labeling and the fucking graphics on the cans, and the guys in the independent breweries that are doing that stuff, like, fair fucking play to them, because they're unbelievable.
Yeah, it's incredible. I don't know, like if you think of the likes of those kind of like larger, like say the Belgian or like German breweries and stuff like that, they all kind of have that kind of like old age like font, like, you know, they kind of go for that kind of like classical Bayern look or whatever of them, like, you know. Whereas I think like the ones here are just incredible, like the art on them, and like the way, like, it's that thing whereby they're not like too like too off the walls either, that they're like, I don't know, too mad. I know like Yellow Belly, all right, have like the Yellow Belly and it's just pure comic booky style, but it's just even the way that is, it's so consistent the way it's like Yellow Belly in the art, and then like he's surrounded by a, like a new background, or he's put himself into it, like a new scenario for each can, is like, it's just so consistent. And it's the same with like, say, Wicklow Wolf, the way it's just like so clean, the cans, like it's just the style, you just know exactly what you're looking at immediately when you're looking at the cans. It's the same, I think there are a few episodes ago I was saying that I went to a carryout up in Nace here, and they had like a plexiglass screen at the door of the shop where the cash register was at the front of the shop. And I was just like, all right, like I actually don't get to have a look at the cans now. Like, this is crazy. So like, then like, ultimately, like you're looking through the shop to try and like get the, like see the cans like on a shelf, like really, really far away. But like, it was like, because of the artwork of the cans, you're like, oh, that's Wicklow Wolf, that's Yellow Belly. Like, I know what I'm getting. Like, just from, you know, I don't know, it must've been like 15 feet away or whatever, that you're still able to see it. It's, I don't know, it's incredible. Shout out to those guys. Whoever does the artistry on the cans, it's amazing.
I love the rebranding that Trouble Brewing have done.
Yeah, it's very, very slick and modern.
And I love O Brothers cans.
Oh yeah.
They're just savage, and that's real.
Oh, nice.
The car range, as well as the mad double IPAs and stuff. The car range is nicely labelled, and then the off the wall stuff that they brew, they have the graffiti artists and things. Obviously, branding is so important that they have, like, I talk about the traditional Belgians and the traditional Germans. You have to remember, a lot of them breweries are around for 50, 60, 80 years.
Yeah.
So they have a brand, and it's recognizable as that brand, and they'll play to that traditional style. Like, look at Chime. I don't think that's changed much over the last few decades. But Yellow Belly has always been like a standout in terms of the Yellow Belly character. Like, we've actually been lucky enough to be immortalized in a Yellow Belly beer label with a collaboration beer we did with them a few years ago. So it's like, it was absolutely great to be part of the process and to see the final result. And getting to brew with Deck and the lads down there was just an absolute load of fun. Not too much fun.
I never want to zest another grapefruit in my life.
You know, it was orange.
Tell us a bit more about that. Tell us a bit more about that experience. That sounds really interesting.
So as the best ideas often come, it's after a few beers.
It was all around Sheffield Beer Week, and they were going over, so we said, sure, fuck it, we'll do a beer with them.
That's kind of it. But what happened was, we were out in Dublin, and I think Deck and Nicky and a few, and Seamus, I don't think Seamus with them anymore, but they were up in town at some beer event, and we just had a few jars, as we always do, and we're like, lads, it'd just be fucking ace to do a collaboration beer with you. And they, in Simon Lambert's, they obviously have the small little brew kit down there. And it was as they were commissioning the big one. So we only brewed a small batch. And they just said, lads, come on down and we'll make up a collab beer. So like, well, what would you like to brew? And I was like, well, my favorite soft drink as a kid growing up was Rock Shandy. And it'd be absolutely ace to make a beer that is an homage to Rock Shandy. So we ended up making a Rock Shandy IPA. It was hot. Like, it was very simple malt bill, hopped with loads of things like Falconer's Flight, Amarillo, Citra, all those kind of big citrusy hops, and a shit ton of zested orange peel and lemon peel. And if I ever have to zest an orange, it'll be too soon. Like, still 3 years later, I think I still have the scars on my knuckles from it. But it was...
I have the scars walking around the place looking for a fucking zester.
Yeah, we didn't have a zester initially. So the lads, we were over at a beer conference in Sheffield, and the guys were going over for Sheffield Beer Week as part of Sheffield's Beer Week. So they were like the Irish brewery and like the first
tap takeover
in a couple of places, and the first few kegs went there, and we kept a few kegs back in Ireland. So there was a few in the Galway Bay pubs and 57 the Headline, and like, I think there was only maybe 10 kegs of it in total, but like, it was just absolutely great to be at bring a load out from the office, go, look, here's a beer that me and Janice made. Let's get, and it turned out to be 7%. So you were just absolutely annihilated after drinking. Like,
wow.
It was excellent. It was great fun. I'd recommend it to anyone to like
make a beer.
That's the dream right there. And speaking of beers, Janice, what are you drinking tonight?
I was on the Third Circle for the Greater Good Sour, but I've actually just cracked open a can of Ace of Haze from Black.
Yeah. So. Actually, we were looking at the Greater Good Sour there today. What's that like, Janice?
I definitely get it if I were you. Now, there's it's a mango fruit sour, but there's another one. What's the word?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've never heard of it. I have no idea what it tastes like, but I can definitely get the mango.
Give it again. What's the word again?
Cherimoya. Cherimoya.
I've never even heard of it.
I'm guessing something from the Amazon.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Sounds like a MasterChef ingredient.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does actually, yeah. MasterChef Australia, though. Like,
oh, are you watching it?
No, I'm not up to date now with the latest series.
It's the best cookery show on TV, full stop.
Very good.
It's the host that
make it. Oh, you know they've changed the panel this year, don't you?
Oh, fuck.
Oh, I don't want to break this bad news to you.
No. Moving swiftly on, what are you guys drinking?
I was going to say, I don't follow them on social media because like, we're about 6 months behind them, so they keep giving spoilers on Instagram.
Oh, do they, yeah.
Yeah, Wayne, what about yourself? What are you drinking tonight?
I'm almost finished my Black's Ace of Haze. And I'm going to go on to the Porterhouse's new Rambler Juicy Pale Ale next.
The Ace of Haze, had we hit record when you were talking about how much you love it or not? Because I think it'd be a shame for the listeners.
Well, for me, so far, it's my beer of the summer so far, in the sense of it ticks all the boxes in the style of IPA that it is. It's a New England IPA. It's hazy, obviously. It's fruity. It's a slight sweetness. There's a touch of bitterness just to make it not cloyingly sweet, but it's an absolute banger and it's totally sessionable at 4.2%. Like that's everything I want. Drinking 8 cans of it at a barbecue or whatever, you kind of want to be able to feel your face, not fall over and burn yourself. But it's like the lads down in Black's are sound as well. It's a great beer and I'm looking forward to trying the.
Shout out to Sam and Maud if you're listening.
Yeah, another. They have another version of it with different hops that I'd be interested to try as well.
Yeah, that was for me, the virtual craft beer festival there at the start of June. That was an absolute hit for me in that. Like I really fucking love that. Like I can remember jotting down a few notes so that like when we recorded our next podcast, I could fucking talk about the beers that we drank. And I just looked like Ace of Haze, fucking unreal was it's a top beer. And actually I was down in Cork the weekend before last there, just I went to an off license with my brother Ian who's been on the podcast, and bought a couple of cans of Ace of Haze because I was like, man, this is top notch stuff. Like it's the kind of thing that, you know, I think if you don't like it, you don't have any taste buds, because it does everything. Like it like you said, it hits every note. And when you're talking about a hazy pale ale, like it's exactly what you fucking want from it. Like,
I'd love to be drinking some of this now in Underdog, on draft.
Stop now, will you?
I'd be happy as a pig in shite.
You're gonna make them emotional, Janice. Will you relax? We'll get to that bit.
I was lit because they had the cryo IPA on tap in Sissy Young's last year when we were there, and like. I just think like Blacks fucking really smash out pale ales. Like they really do them well. Like, you know, it's one of these breweries like Kinnegar that just I don't think they have a miss. And speaking of Blacks, like in the hall of beers I got today, there's a pineapple and mango tropical pale ale that I picked up.
Oh, that's on the new actually. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so they were 3 for £10. So that was it. It was 5 for £16, and they were 3 for £10. And I was like, I can't leave them behind. I need to get 3 of them. So they won't last the weekend. Owen, what are you drinking yourself?
So I'm on Stout Export by Boundary. So they're a Belfast-based brewery. They're like a co-op brewery, I think, aren't they? That they you like buy in, I think, to Like, it's not like shares, is it? Or is it, it's kind of like...
It is kind of like you're owned by your members. So it's kind of probably more like...
A credit union.
It's probably more like a dairy co-op, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Like,
Glambia Brewing.
yeah, the Glambia Brewing. Yeah,
but essentially, like the brewery is owned by its members, and all strategic decisions are made by the members at AGMs and EGMs, and that is very democratic. Lacada's another one up in Belfast.
Yeah, Lacada. Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those things where Boundary are knocking out some serious beers as well, and we're actually really lucky to get them down here, because like for a long time they weren't available down here, and we'd only ever be able to pick them up when we'd fly up to Newry or something like that. So it's great to see, and they're really well renowned worldwide now, Boundary. They're kind of like they're operating at a level kind of very similar to Whiplash on an international scale in terms of the international collabs and you know, festivals and things. Like their festival had to be sadly cancelled as well.
And what's your man we know, Matthew?
Yeah, Matthew, yeah.
Fucking mad up he is. He's great.
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, we actually, wasn't he down the night that we were brewing with Yellow Belly?
Yeah.
And we all had beers then in the bar afterwards. And yeah. they're gas crack. But Matthew is actually genuinely a really, really nice.
Yeah, he's such a nice guy
and great brewer. And then we had great fun with him up at the, what was that bloody yoke we went to?
ABV. Yeah, another festival that's no longer with us, but ABV Fest in Belfast was.
Did you ever get to go to one of them?
No.
Honestly, you talked earlier about like calendars not lining up. Like, I think I've bought tickets to more beer festivals in the last couple of years that I haven't been able to make by the time they've come around. Like, it just breaks my fucking heart every time.
You need to learn how to pull a sticky.
Yeah, but like, it's really hard to pull a sickie with your family. Like, I just wish people would stop having babies and organizing Christmas.
I've never seen DJ.
Yeah. Oh, listen, man. That's part of the problem. Super. I tell you what, right? I'm on the Old Brother Nightcrawler. A mix. And I'm just about to open a new can. So I'm going to ask you for silence to see if we can get this. If the Michael picked this up, it's a 4.5% a mixed out. So the most controversial ingredient in brewing, lactose, is used, but used really well. Like it's like there's a nice bit of bitterness there, like touch coffee, but not a touch of coffee. There's quite a good hint of coffee there. But it's a lovely texture, like for a stout, and it's a real great fucking in between from your macro stouts to the likes of your, your oatmeal stouts that are a lot less creamier. So I think it's a lovely kind of way for it's a great stout for someone who's wedded to Guinness or wedded to Murphy's or Beamish, and you're trying to get them to taste some independent brewing, because it's fucking delicious. It's delicious. And again, like Wayne, like you were talking about earlier, 4.5%, you can't go wrong with it. You know, you could sit there for the day now drinking this, especially a miserable, blustery, wintry, sunny southeast day. You know, it's fucking ideal for that. Really, really nice. And again, like Janice, like we were saying earlier, like just the fucking artwork and the beauty of the can itself as well is something to behold. Like it really stands out. And even the can looks fucking wintry and warm, yeah, and welcoming. Like it's the can, like when I saw it in World of My Wines earlier, I was like, that looks like my grand uncle's house where they've got the open fire that you have to start it by turning the wheel. That's like one of my earliest drinking memories, is having cans of Guinness there in front of the fire in the winter, talking shit. Hi. 5 in the morning. So it actually, like, there was a nostalgia factor to the can for me.
It looks like Saun. It looks like the Festival of Saun to
it
me.
It is actually, yeah. That's a good one. The Festival of Saun. It's a fucking cracking beer. Cracking beer. And I felt like stout today. And I know it's a bit fucking cracked because we're in the middle of July. Start of July. But it felt like winter today. It's
always appropriate to have stout.
Yeah.
I know, but I'm a complete fucking seasonal prick, like, you know, I'm like, summer I'm all for the fruity IPAs, and then like stout and porter season, like I'm a firm believer in stout and porter season, but days like today are the exception, and I'm not a bit fucking sad that I made that choice, because it's a fucking belter, an absolute fucking belter.
DJ, before we move on now to talking absolute muck, right, I just want to give a quick shout out to from the Virtual Beer Festival. Again, fucking great old day, tipping in and out of it all day long. But you were saying there about like lactose being one of the most contentious ingredients in beer. But big shout out to Gloss. It's like a milkshake IPA by the White Hag. It's peaches and cream milkshake IPA. And fuck me, it was savage. Oh my God. So we had, I had that, and then like Kira tipped in as well, and she was like tipping in on as well. And it was so good. Now you'd only drink probably one, two max, like, but God, it was just like a completely different taste. It was incredible. I loved it.
I don't know if you caught it there, Owen, but I think Wayne's reaction was the opposite. Like, I think from what he described earlier of his eight cans at a barbecue, it's probably the last thing he'd want to drink.
Oh, well, there's no way you'd have eight cans of this anytime ever. Like,
I think it's more because I'm just ideologically opposed to lactose and IPA. But that's just me. It's either you're either pro treaty or anti treaty. So you're either pro lactose or anti lactose.
I think there's a few converters at the beer festival, all right.
I don't like lactose in IPA. Stop doing it.
I've had it in a couple of sours to good effect. Kind of brings it more into like an ice cream sour kind of slushy type effort. But if each to their own. I haven't had that particular one that you're talking about there, but I generally wouldn't actively seek out a lactose infused IPA.
Yeah, like definitely a few I've had before have been quite like sickly, and like this was sweet, but it wasn't sickly. I don't know, like, if that makes sense. Like, here, look, split a can between you and let me know what you think of it.
See if I can pick one up.
Yeah. Savage though. Oh.
Man, speaking of stuff that you split between yourselves. The Irish Beer Snob blog and podcast, right? I was looking.
Gone another way.
Yeah. Look, I'm trying to keep a PC. I want to keep to that.
Careful now. I just need that down with this sort of thing sign.
Yeah. I just think it's a lovely thing because when I think it was 2014 when you started it up, if I'm not mistaken, is that right?
Yeah, 2014, 2013, I think. Yeah.
And like you describe it as a journey through craft beer and food. I just want to know, right? I remember when we started Snowcast and we started actively following people in the independent craft beer scene and stuff like that, and then we came across your podcast. Your first ever episode was, I remember listening through the back catalogue, and I started off.
You're a braver man than most.
Yeah, listen. Look, I was looking for inspiration. Like, we hadn't much going for us.
Definitely don't do that.
And but something that stuck with me as we were doing, starting off Snowcast, was your first podcast was in Scotland, I think, with Brewdog. And you specifically mentioned the craft beer revolution in 2014. I suppose, first of all, like, in your own words, how would you describe the blog and the podcast? And then secondly, following on that, like, learning from the last 6-7 years of like investing yourselves into this and talking to brewers and shit. How do you think that craft beer revolution you're talking about in Scotland in 2014, like, has it led up to your expectations over the last 6 years, I suppose?
Great question. I suppose taking the whole thing, like the podcast and blog all started out, and I probably need to update the about us. The website update is one of those perpetually on the long finger. I'll get around to that eventually. What started out of initially, I started blogging because Janice was fed up listening to me. The podcast, I got kind of pushed into it by a friend of mine who used to podcast about beer, but he doesn't anymore. And I just happened to be over at BrewDog, and I was able to interview Stuart Bowman, who was the head brewer at BrewDog at that time. And that was a very strange experience. Like, it was great to be able to talk to somebody, but like if you've subjected yourself to the back catalogue, you would have seen that there was a few early episodes where it was just me talking. And I admire people who can sit in front of a video camera and do it on YouTube, or sit in front of a microphone and record a podcast content on their own. I just found that very difficult and unnatural. And Janice has always had a real taste for other things, like Timothy Taylor Landlord in the UK would be a big epiphany moment for her in terms of, I'm not speaking for her, but just in terms of her beer journey, that it kind of just made sense. Let's do it together and talk about our journey from, like, we're still novices, we're enthusiasts, we're not professionals, we both have day jobs. We initially started talking about beer and matching it with food and those kind of things, but it quickly evolved, and we took a lot of thought about what do we want out of this. And we kind of wanted to use our platform as a method and to give a platform to breweries to tell their own story in their own words, because you know the challenges they face. They don't have the huge marketing budgets. People buy off people. People buy stories. People want to understand what's behind someone's decision to leave a successful career in IT, science, or whatever to go start working in owning a brewery and operating it and making their own beer to sell to customers who will be the harshest critics. They'll buy your beer once. If they don't like it, they'll never buy it again. It's very different to, like, if you're homebrewing for your mates. Your mates will probably go, oh yeah, that's great, but really it's riddled with flaws or whatever. So in the last number of years, our podcast has evolved into more like, very much like your own, a conversational thing where we like to have guests on. We still have we'll just have the two of us and we'll shoot shit for a half an hour or 45 minutes, talk about the happenings in the beer industry. But we like to have people on to tell their own story and to ask the questions that people want to know, because people might not be comfortable to go speak to someone directly. And with the absence of beer festivals this year and outlets for them, I think this year the medium that we operate in is taking on more importance and in supporting small indigenous businesses, whether it's breweries, cideries, distilleries, or whatever, that we are passionate advocates of independent breweries in this country. And it's great to have a beer with someone, even if it's over Zoom, and get behind, chink into the armor and just find out what's behind it. What's the motivation and what's the story? And, you know, like, what's the story as in tell us. And you'll often find that sometimes people have gone into these breweries and things, and they might have the skills to be a brilliant brewery, but they might not a brewer, but they might not have the skills to market themselves or talk about themselves. Like, we've all been in professional work situations, no doubt, where it's like, oh, tell me a little bit about yourself and tell me some of your achievements. Like, particularly when you're in a job interview or something, you're like, bloody hell, it's something that a lot of people struggle with. So we kind of found that naturally we're able to kind of, because it's a natural conversation. The only difference is there's a microphone there and we're talking about beer, and everyone loves talking about beer.
Or a video chat through Zoom when one of us is in our pajamas. But she got her hair done and the makeup is still on.
Yeah, so that's, I've probably rambled on a bit far there, but yeah, that's basically it. Like
you look at Joe from Rascals there, like, and he's on like fucking the Tonight Show last week, like with a national platform about Rascals reopening, and like, even at that, it's not all about Rascals. It's about independent brewing, and he gives a nod to like independent brewing itself, not just Rascals and stuff. So I think it's a brilliant community. Coming back to the original question, Wayne and Janice, I suppose the thing then about the last 6 years, right? You were talking 2014 about this craft beer revolution. This is why I write these things down. I suppose, look, the craft beer revolution, to us it's happened because we're invested in it and we love it. But then the market share doesn't reflect it, I suppose, in the Irish market. I suppose what from your, as a consumer like we are, and as I actually wrote down what you said, because I think it's a brilliant phrase and it's something that resonated with me. Like, as passionate advocates of independent brewing in Ireland and beyond, what can, I suppose, two things. What can they do more, and what can we do more just to increase that market share? Because I do think independent breweries, with the challenges that Owen's just outlined, have, like you said, they don't have the massive marketing budgets. They don't have, like, the brewers are geniuses, and they have to put their focus and energy into producing quality beer, because if the beer isn't quality, as you said, someone will drink a bad beer and fucking write them off forever. So what are the challenges, guys, do you think? How can they do it better, and how can we be better advocates for them?
Well, if you think about it, because you're drinking the beer and you're in your own social circles, how many people have you converted over to good beer?
Yeah, a good few.
More than I thought I would.
Yeah, well then there you go. And we're the same. Like, we obviously, we love good beer. We love talking about good beer, and we like like-minded people. But there are other people out there that we are friends with that just don't want anything to do with it, that just don't like it. And we have to appreciate that as well.
Yeah.
Inclusivity. That's the one. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And if somebody likes a Guinness and prefers a Guinness, I'm not just going to say, well, hang on a second, I don't want to drink with you because you're drinking Guinness. Drink this instead.
Yeah. I suppose there was a second part to your question that I didn't really answer. Has the craft beer revolution played out the way I thought it would in 2013? No. quite simply, I think...
Brutally honest?
The numbers haven't backed up. Like, I think the projected growth and market share of the Irish craft beer sales by 2020 was in the double digits, like 10%, 12% range back then. And at that point, it was like 1.5% or 1%. Now, I think the major difference that we in Ireland have had is that the establishment, e.g. Molson Coors, Heineken, Diageo, C&C, have seen the curve happening in the States. They've seen the curve happening in the UK, and they've been able to adapt quicker in the sense of bringing out fake craft brands such as Cuper, etc., to muddy the waters and to confuse consumers. So Hop House 13 is one of Diageo's largest sellers, but it was born directly out of a way to frustrate and confuse customers. So I think the establishment has fought back, not only with muddying the waters, but and it's unbelievable the competition authority didn't find any wrongdoing in anything that was going on, but they're undoubtedly offering shitloads of free beer, other soft marketing stuff like awnings, whatever. So I just think that the Irish-based macros were able to respond a little bit quicker because they've learned from experiences in other markets. We also didn't have the tradition, or we lost the tradition due to the dominance of Guinness of a regional brewer over the previous 300 years or so. Whereas in the UK, the tradition of a guy brewing beer 10 miles down the road from the pub it's poured in is still very much a very strong tradition there, with obviously notable large regionals and things. But I think beer, I think craft beer is a term that causes problems for me. But I think sometimes it can get a bit exclusive. And when it starts getting a bit exclusive, it's getting a bit Ponzi wine bars in the 80s kind of stuff, that realistically beer has always been the everyman drink. It's for everybody. There's styles to suit everybody. And I think that as soon as we forget sight of that, then we're in trouble, that we need to be inclusive of, like, and that's, if you have a mate who likes a pint of Guinness, so what, leave them at it. If you have a friend who's a vegetarian, do they try and convert you to be a vegetarian every time you're eating a steak? No, they don't.
But so I'd still eat meat in front of you.
But I just think that we need to be cognizant of the businesses we support nowadays, and that includes asking the question of a pub you go into if they've no craft beer on tap. You go, do you have a local beer? I wouldn't even say the word craft, because they'll instantly point to Hop House 13 or the Citra IPA. And that's because the big guys have educated them that way. Publicans are meant to be salespeople and professional dispensers of drink, but more and more it's a homogenous experience. And I think from listening to you guys over the years, you guys love your non-homogenous experiences that you're getting. Waterford, you've got your Grady's Yard, you've got Welsh's, you've got Phil Grimes, you've got pubs that cater for everybody, but it's a non-homogenous experience with someone who's gone, I'm going to have a beer that's made 10 kilometers down the road, or even in the town. Like, you obviously Waterford, you've Metalman in the town, and they're very well supported around the town, so that's great to see. So I think I kind of think, I know I've rambled on a bit, but I kind of think they're kind of the challenges that are faced. I think we as customers need to ask publicans and then vote with our custom. Like, if you go in a few times and the penny's not dropped and there's more than one person asking, then that person's not a very good business person, because you respond to the consumer's demands. Even if it's only having bottles or cans in the fridge, draft is a bigger proposition because it goes off quicker. But you can keep a can in the fridge for a year, you can keep a bottle in the fridge for a year.
I think as well, the thing there that you hit the nail on the head as well is, like, the macros have been really fucking smart. They've been cute whores, to use that phrase. They've been cute whores because cute whore, the Open Gate, Citra, Hop House, these guys. It's not just the fact that the publican can point to them and say, oh, that's craft, but it's the tap space as well. Like, tap space is money. And that's what I love about Phil Grimes' Grady's Yard and stuff is the taps are, like, banging your face. Like, if you go in the back door of Phil Grimes, you're greeted with White Gypsy, you're greeted with whatever he's in from Rascals, Yellow Belly, etc. And it's colourful and great. Like, you don't get that in most people. And actually, I've never thought of it in that sense of it being a non-homogenous experience compared to a lot of other people that we are blessed in Waterford to have these kind of establishments. I
just have a thought now about Phil Grimes, right? So I have an idea, right? So I don't know, Wayne and John, have you been in Phil Grimes in Waterford?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you notice that, like, so if you walk in the front door of Phil Grimes, there's all the taps in front of you there on the right are your Heinekens and Guinness and things like that are at the front of the bar. And then at the back of the bar, then he has the kind of wraparound bit with all of your local and craft beers there, right? So I would say that Tom, right, has been like, right, for like the prime real estate of taps, he's been like to the guys who come in from Diageo and the likes, he's gone like, oh yeah, yeah, the front of the bar, yeah, come in the front door here, this is our prime real estate. Whereas the back of the bar is actually the prime real estate, and he has completely shifted it all to the back. I think that man is a genius.
He's a cute whore.
He is a cute whore, but he's not a cute whore.
And Janice is out of here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have to say, when we were down in Waterford last year, I tweeted about it at the time. It was 100% the most authentic experience as a tourist. Like, we're obviously Irish and living in Ireland, but Tom spent so much time with us.
So much time.
Because we went in, we'd done a little bit of a pub crawl. We avoided, what's the place across the road, the Welcome Inn?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
We kept going because I figured my accent might cause a few problems. Right. So we went
in the 1950s to Tom.
Yeah, exactly. So we went down to Tom and we were having a few beers, and I think Foggy Juice by Rascals was on at the time. Absolutely great beer. And we were kind of like looking about things to do, and he was like, because the weather forecast wasn't great. We were meant to do the Greenway, and I was like, I'm not doing the Greenway if it's pissing rain.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, lads, you have to do the Copper Coast Drive and go down to Tramore and do all this and end up in Dungarvan. And we ended up in Dungarvan and we met Claire and what's his Carmack from Dungarvan Brewing Company when we were down there. Went to Mary's for lunch. But it's like, if you want to do something really interesting, he said, go up and do the ferry road on the way up to Mahon Falls.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, ferry road? What the fuck is this nonsense? And he got out a map and he's like, it's fucking here. And it's like, if you were like coming in from the States or anywhere in Europe and you happen to fall into Phil Grimes' pub, you'd get the same experience because he's just so passionate. Not only about the beer he sells, like, I appreciate he sells the other things because it pays the bills in a lot of cases, but he is so passionate about the local area. And I was just like, I could not imagine meeting a more passionate advocate for Waterford as a county. And I was blown away by my experience of meeting him. We were both blown away by our experience. And we went up and we did it. And then when we got back to Waterford that night, we went in and had a load more pints and then we finished off the keg of Foggy Juice. And it was just absolutely fantastic experience. And you have an absolute gem of a pub there.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, he's actually that passion that he has for the local area or whatever, he actually has a passion for other people's interests as well. So like, you could talk about anything. You could be on about your financial services or whatever, and he'll go on, tell me a bit more about that now. And he'll find some story from the back of his mind where he'll come out with a little gem of knowledge, and he'll ask you a little bit, and he'd ask you then to explain that little piece that he had in his mind further to him, you know? And it's a brilliant way to interact with people, whereby he's so inquisitive and and also has his own, he's such a knowledgeable person as well about beer as well. Like, great, like, so enthusiastic about the beers he's selling, like, and again, the people behind the beers as well. Like, oh, he sold this to me. It's a great, and even the salespeople as well. Like, he'll tell great yarns about like the sales guys and stuff who come into him. But is there any bars up by your way, guys, that you're very proud of?
Well, they're getting there.
They're getting there, yeah.
Well, there's a new local one that's opened up. My favourite bar in the town is called Larry and Nora's. And it's more of a cocktail trendy bar than it's a beer bar.
Instagrammable bar.
Navan isn't a great town for, say, craft beer. It's a bloody great town for Guinness.
Yeah.
It's odd. It's actually getting better. Larry Norris has two brewery taps, which are the local brewery to us in Trim. Ryan's Bar, which is a major Heineken house, is going to have two or three brewery taps when that reopens in July. And there's a couple of pubs that have other pubs that have brew, which is local, obviously. There's another pub that has Porterhouse IPA always on. So it's getting better. It is getting better. The one pub that was in the town that used to sell a bit of everything has sadly closed. But I think it's very difficult in a non-major city, like Navan is really a commuter town into Dublin. The most people would socialize in Dublin and get a bus home or
whatever.
And like, the publicans at Navan deal with their consumers. But I have noticed more and more, before lockdown anyway, more and more accounts were taking on like a brew IPA or a brew lager tap or a pale ale tap, because they're three very solid beers. And Rome wasn't built in a day. That won't get there, but it'll come down to consumers challenging as well. Like, we did go to a restaurant very early when it opened, and we asked them, did they have any local beers? And they tried to give us a Lagunitas IPA. And I was like, oh, that's not very local, but I'll drink it anyway. But at the same time, like, you have the ultimate hypocrisy of quite a number of businesses that champion, we have local suppliers and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But when it comes to their beer is not even in the equation. So
not even in Ireland.
I think it's important to challenge without kind of going down the cancel culture that we're in at the moment, going, I'm not going to drink there ever again because they don't sell beer. Like, one of our favorite pubs in the town is an absolute old man bar called Lockie's.
It's actually called Henry Lockrans.
Henry Lockrans. Everyone calls it Lockie's. But we go in.
The locals do.
We go in and it's like, Guinness is fantastic in there. There's always a good pull on it. It's always good Guinness. It has a pool table at the back. Has a jukebox at the back. Has a couple of poker machines.
Lockie at the bar.
It is a stereotypical Irish old man pub. It's got lounge at the front, bar at the back. And it's uncomplicated. But you'll often go in there and you'll have a couple of Guinnesses, and then you'll notice that they're selling a Brockman's gin and tonic for £6. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, that should be £8 or £9. Like, and so you just...
Don't be advertising that now. They'll put the price up.
You're more than welcome to come up to Navan when restrictions end, don't you? It's one of those things where Navan is getting there slowly. But I think the same could be said of a lot of non-major towns. Like, Waterford is obviously a major city. And there would be maybe the college experience as well.
But now, going back, we did have Brewhouse a couple of years ago. And when that first opened, that place was cracking. It was brilliant. They had all their own taps, but they had another couple of taps that were rotational. But their letdown at the time was they didn't cater for everybody. So if they had the Guinness tap and the Heineken tap, you know, that would have made the world a difference in a, yeah, in a town as small as Navan, even though...
Yeah, that's very interesting, because we had it with Grady's Yard in Waterford. So Grady's Yard had 10 of their own taps, and then they had 10 guest taps. So just 10 like low or 10 craft breweries around Ireland, they would have had their taps as well. And then after a while, like after maybe what, a year and a half or so, DJ of trading or so, some of those guest taps converted into macro taps. And, you know, we were very like, oh, come on, guys, this is what we loved about the place, you know. But it's interesting hearing that, because you're kind of like, it, you know, is it a thing where you're trying to, you know, you're trying to make sure that if there's a group of people going in and there is, say, 10 of you and 8 of you are drinking craft beers, that like those other two people who are, like, are just fond of the Guinness or fond of your Heineken or whatever, that they're happy as well, you know?
Yeah, again, that's the whole inclusivity.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that's brilliant what Grady's Yard have done. They're not excluding anybody, especially if you're like that. If they're very much a student town, isn't it?
There is a IT in Waterford.
There is like a huge student population there, right?
In Waterford, yeah. WIT is the big the IT here, like, and yeah.
And I think that it's really good that they've done that, because as you said, there's going to be a large group of people, and some like their Guinness, some like their Heineken, and you're not going to be able to convert those people no matter how much you try. But at the same time, you don't want to exclude them, because you could have the best fucking burger in the town.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
as well, it kind of, like, if there's like one or two people coming in and they're going, oh, you know, can I have a Heineken, please? It does give them the option of, oh, would you try Citra or whatever? You know, it gives, you know, and they do their tasters and stuff. You know, they're very open to being like, would you have a taste of this? So yeah. I think, yeah, it probably does kind of bridge the gap as well. We were definitely, like myself and Darren were actually heartbroken when it initially happened. We were like, oh, it's lost the heart of like what it was. But I think on like, I don't know, several reflections on it. Definitely now, I think it probably was the right move from exactly inclusivity.
I think the realities of business come into it as well. Like ultimately, one of the big failings of Brewhouse, in my opinion, was very soon after, like within 6 months of opening, they had up to 6 guest taps, and Yellow Belly Citra would have been pouring regularly there at the time.
They went
from having 6 guest taps to no guest taps.
None.
Which was a bit daft. But then they were also making big deals about showing all live sports, rugby, football, Gaelic games, whatever. And you know yourself, guys go out on a Saturday afternoon at 12 o'clock for the half 12 kickoff in the Premier League. And there might be 10 or 12 of them. They're going to sit there all day watching sports, doing a few horses across the road. And they're going to be drinking pints, and they're going to be eating chicken wings, and they're going to be a cash cow for that quiet period during the day. But if you have a group of 20 people coming in, and 10 of them drink craft and 10 of them drink Guinness and Heineken, and I have a kind of a pint of Guinness, please. No, we don't serve it here. And even if you go, will you try our beer? They might only stay for one and go, fuck that. Let's go across to the pub across the road where we can drink what we like. And the other 10 people are discommoded then, because they'll go along with the herd, because they'll revert to drinking Guinness because it's what we've always done.
Yeah.
I just think it's clever. It's better to include the audience rather than exclude.
Yeah, that's a brilliant point, because it brings me back to something actually that I think has been a theme throughout your podcast, guys, is you've always talked about the craft beer journey, about trying as many things as you can try to develop your palate. And I find that like craft beer and when I'm trying to convert, say, my brothers to craft beer or our uncles or our friends who are like diametrically opposed and think craft beer is the devil. Or when I say craft, like obviously independent craft beer, I always find that like you have to make that distinction, that like you have to find a bridge and you have to develop that palate. And I think, yeah, like what we were saying there, that like when Grady's Yard had, when we went in and saw a Moretti, Heineken and Murphy's tap, we were a bit like, ah, come on, lads, come on. But you do have to care, you do have to have that inclusivity. In terms of the developing the palate then, like, I think coming back circle then to what we were talking about earlier about the craft beer revolution, our craft breweries, right, like, are they overly focusing on the double dry hopped IPAs and the fucking these mad techniques and stuff like this, mixed fermentation, right? They're brilliant, and for us, that's what we want. But do they need to consolidate and have more gateway independent beers, like your Keller Lagers, like your like the Milk Stout from Old Brother? Is that something that I suppose they could put more investment in, so that the 97.4% of people, 97.2% of people who don't drink independent craft beer regularly, do we need to provide them with like gateway beers, basically more of them, and have more of them available?
There are a lot of breweries in Ireland, I feel, do a really, really good core range that could be called gateway beers. And one of them for me would probably be Blacks. Blacks do a really good range. Like their KPA would be a really, really good beer. And that would be a really good entryway beer. I know a lot of people out there have a thing against 8 Degrees. I don't. 8 Degrees have a really, really good core range that would be really good for a gateway beer. Brew Brewery, our local one, their core range is great way for a gateway beer.
Pothouse.
There's loads and loads of Irish breweries, and I'm sorry I didn't mention you all, but they are doing really, really good beers that could be gateway beers. And there are some other breweries that we all know and love that are doing these mad, wild shite jokes. Not shite jokes, but you know what I mean. They're not focusing on the trilogy, the holy trinity.
Yeah.
And I think they're doing enough. It's just I just don't think, if people aren't interested in it, you're never going to change their mindset. Yeah. But for bringing it back to changing the palate and all, you didn't like cheese and now you do. I didn't like spices and now look at me.
No, I think it's
I think if you know a
way, I was a cheese phobe, yes.
I think if you know a way at it, like get your entry level beer and then just build on it.
I think it's a really simple thing. I think
I hated stout when we first started, and it's my favourite style now.
If you think about pushing an open door, you kind of want to go, do you want to try a mouthful of what I'm drinking and see what you think? Mm. Eventually, if you're drinking enough breadth of style, you'll give someone a taste of someone and go, fucking hell, it's really nice. Whether it's a brown ale or whether it's a red ale or whatever. I think Guinness has a very privileged position in this country, not only because of the link to the storehouse and its importance in tourism, and it's in every pub across the country, bar a few standouts in Cork that would be it's Murphy's or Beamish or nothing, that you'd literally have a situation where people are so brand loyal to Guinness as a brand because their dad drunk it, their granddad drunk it, and it goes back generationally. But when you're kind of looking at generations of people who are well-traveled, as in they've gone to far-flung Europe or the States or South America, and they've undoubtedly drank the local beer there, that when they come back and they kind of go, you know, I really got fancy Heineken, I want to try something different or whatever, that's a large percentage of the current consumer. But it's encouraging people without intimidating people. Like Grady's Yard, if you flip the example on your head that you guys were initially disappointed to go in and see Moretti, Murphy's and Heineken on the tap, you're a non-craft drinker and you walk into that pub for the first time and you don't see a single recognizable brand, how do you feel? Like, you're looking at a list of taps that look like cartoon characters and you're going, what the fuck is this? So at the same time, education is hugely important, and I think podcasts, blogs, Instagrammers, tweeters all have a massive role to play in spelling out that all craft beer is not hoppy, that you can have a real malty, like, I really love Four Provinces from Kimmage in Dublin. they brought out a Dark Mild, which is a style that no one, I think the only other brewer that did it before was Third Circle and West Kerry Brewery have done a mild beer that I can recall in recent times. It's basically a malt session ale, 3.8%. Anyone who drinks Smithwick should love that shit, because that's probably what Smithwick would have tasted like 20 years ago. Mm. So there's a beer for everybody, in the same way that, you know, if you introduce them in a way that you kind of say, look, have a taste of this and see what you think. If you don't like it, it's fine. We'll find something. And if you try a load of different beers, they might not at that time be like not open to it, but they might go, you know what, I had a beer there 6 months ago and I thought that was actually really nice and I'll try it. And they'll start pick. They might go on their own little voyage of discovery. They'll be in Tesco and they'll be in the craft beer aisle and they might just pick up a couple of different bottles and do it that way.
But don't be that dick and berate them for not enjoying the good beer either. If they like their Heineken and their macro beer, that's what they like.
Absolutely. And that's like the nail on the head. Like, you know, I think, like, as you were saying to me earlier, Ian, like, you know, the blog title and the name and the Twitter handle is ironic, because, like, you know, exactly, like Irish beer snob, but it's not snobbery. It's, you know, this is what I like, and you should try some. And if you don't like it, fair play. There's no hard feelings. Lads, a feature of the podcast throughout lockdown, certainly the second half of lockdown, has been Pint Watch. And I think Pint Watch has fulfilled its duty at this stage, because we have pubs open this week. Before we started recording, we were talking about whether we'd go to a pub at the moment or not or whatever. And you guys were talking about, you know, Navin and what was there now at the moment. So I think Pint Watch has morphed into what is ultimately now Pub Watch. Where we're looking at, right, the pubs that we love, when are they opening? And then when am I comfortable to go and have a drink in the pub that I watch? And I suppose we have to look at now as Pub Watch essentially now, I think, is when is my Phil Grimes, Grady's Yard, Tully's, Lockie's experience going to be what it was in January 2020? So I suppose from what you've seen, what you've experienced, what social media has told us from this week. Owen, I suppose I'll go to you first in just asking from a Pub Watch point of view, where do you think we are and when will we have the January 2020 Phil Grimes experience again?
Good question, yeah. So I think maybe just where we are, first of all, right? So I think when we initially did Pint Watch and we were kind of guessing dates, and you very correctly guessed that we pulled back the restaurant date to the correct date, all right? And then you got a bit cocky and you tried to guess that it would be banished altogether. But you're right. But even now, so I said at that time that this restaurant period would be viewed as a bit of a trial period for when pubs would fully open. And like, it's kind of been shown a little in some places. So in fairness, I'd say it's the same thing as the coronavirus. Like 95% or more or whatever of pubs or restaurant pubs are doing the right thing. They're, you know, they're doing a meal and doing pubs. But then the ones that have come into the media that are taking the absolute piss of, like, here's whatever, what was it, like a fish and chips and like 38 pints of Guinness or something like that in Dublin for, like, I don't know, like definitely not 105 minutes either. Like, I think there's still like a good bit of ironing out of these restrictions. There was like a article as well in, or it was at RTE or something, had a thing on Pygmalion in Dublin whereby they couldn't control the queues outside of it. So then like the guards had to come along and were like, you are shut down, you are now closed, like, you know. And they're like, you know, they said they were trying to do their best, but I don't know, is it a thing? Then like, anecdotally, myself, I've heard of like a few people like going to fucking golf clubs and stuff and ripping into those. And then like there's just other things of like, I don't know, places handing out menus when they shouldn't have been handing out menus. So I definitely think at the moment, there's been, I'd say, probably more hiccups with this section of the lockdown. Oh, nice. I still do think that the 20th of July will reopen. Most pubs will reopen. But your question was, when will we see the pubs that we want to open? And I think there's a few of the publicans that we know that won't be too pushed going for the 20th of July, because they're going to wait until things are perfect for them to open. And, you know, they want to make sure that everything that has come beforehand, like they've seen kind of what ways pubs have worked and stuff. So I actually think a lot of pubs might even wait till post the 20th of July, view how other pubs are operating, see what kind of fuck ups they've made, and then they might tip away and, you know, make those corrections. So I don't know. Am I going to make a guess? I suppose maybe August bank holiday weekend, that some of them might open for that. But yeah, or maybe the Monday before that August bank holiday weekend, or something like that. Yeah.
Interesting. Janice, I see you nodding along to a lot of that there. Have you answered that? Like, I suppose, like, when do you see us coming back to our January 2020 pub scene?
Well, I know myself, and in our town, a lot of the places that I want to go to aren't opening until after the 20th of July. And I get that. It's to echo what you were saying, is how to see how the other pubs have done it and see where they've gone wrong and to make it more comfortable for the customer. But to be perfectly honest with you, I'm actually dying to get up to Dublin. Like, I'm dying to get up to Dublin. I'm dying to see Jeff and Maura in the headline and have the chats with them. Dying to get into, dare I say it, Underdog. Miss that place. Will we be able to get into Underdog with the way things are? With it being so small? Who knows?
Do you know how that place is? Or anything? Do you know any plans for them? Like, are they going to be?
I did, from Underdog.
Yeah.
I did just see a tweet that they had put up saying that we're hoping to announce something soon, but I genuinely don't know. That one's a bit of a tough call, because especially if it's the 2 meter distance, you know, will there be like five people in the bar with the size of the place? Like, you know, it is tiny. But do I want to see the pub scene pre-COVID again? Because, like, there's some places that you'd go to that you can't even get into. And it's like Friday or Saturday night, forget it. You can't get a seat. The standing room only. You're squished into somewhere. Will I ever feel comfortable in a pub like that again? Who knows? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's... yeah. Very honest, but like, yeah, it's very true as well. And like, you kind of like, even kind of reflecting back on like something, you know, you kind of look back with like these nostalgic eyes and you're like, oh, it was so great. We had such a great time. But like, when you're actually thinking about it, you're like, no, like, there was a lot of times where I just crammed into a pub and I was just sipping away, like, just.
Like, and then I'm going to be wondering, have you washed your hands?
Yeah. Hello? Yeah.
And I'll never let you buy me a drink.
Yeah. Like,
well, you can buy all the drinks. Well, you can buy all the drinks.
I kind of do anyway. But I suppose it kind of highlights the, like, if the question asked is verbatim, when will we see the same experience as January 2020? Realistically, not until the vaccine is widely doled out. Like, I don't, like, even though COVID-19 is obviously a very contagious illness, I'm not a medical expert, but its breeding ground is close human contact. You know, if you're in a pub that's limited on space, and as Janice alluded to, like, if it's standing room only and someone breathing on you, you have a chance of getting infected. Like, you might be asymptomatic and that's fine, but what if you bring that into someone you like, you care about, like, who's maybe in a vulnerable category? Like, I'll be honest, I've always enjoyed drinking at home. Like, I've always loved drinking out as well. But there's just something nice about, you come in from work on Friday evening, you've done the can shop at lunchtime, and you go, fuck that. I'm getting into the stretchy pants. I'm getting a takeaway. And I'm going to have a few cans. and this is fucking great. So it's why I'm paying a fucking mortgage at the end of the day.
You
so,
have a Zoom call with randomers.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think like the toilets is the critical thing. And like you've mentioned it previously.
Yeah.
My good friends on the Beer O'Clock show continuously are talking about toilets. Like I'm a member of a golf club where the locker rooms are out of commission because they won't pay for somebody to stand and monitor the locker rooms while people coming in and out. So they just said, fuck it, we'll keep them closed. So is a publican going to pay for some floor staff member to stand in front of a toilet and say, Johnny, you're not getting in there. There's someone in there already. And they're dying to either puke or whatever. And you're kind of like, and it's probably some 18-year-old who's in college dealing with a belligerent drunk. Like that's going to cost, like I can foresee, unfortunately, human nature coming out, and we might see scenes around the August Bank Holiday in particular similar to what we saw in Temple Bar. I hope to be wrong.
Yeah.
I want to be wrong, but I think, like, you look at the scenes in the UK where they're on the beach in Bournemouth and all that kind of crack. Like, I really hope I am wrong that we don't see situations where some publicans open up and just go, you know, fuck the rules. Like the announcement from the guards today saying we will be checking up on people is welcome, but really what they don't have criminal charge power. They can only recommend it to the judge at the next renewal meeting, which might not be for 12 months. And in 12 months time, COVID-19 might be an uncomfortable memory.
But at the same time, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. Like I would love to be able to go to the pub and be, you know, be with my friends and be with the gang that we miss up in Dublin and have those pints and everything. Yeah. But realistically, I have absolutely no idea when I'm going to be able to do that again.
Mm. Yeah, I see. Well, I suppose where I'm coming from there as well is I'm looking at a situation where, look, I'm vulnerable, so I need to be careful about this. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, in my head over the last few months, I've been thinking about when will I get my January 2020 pub experience back? And I suppose I don't enjoy the pub experience of people breathing on me and being crammed in anyway. So that's why the Phil Grimes of the world appeal to me. And that's why our podcast is called Snugcast, not like crammed into a smoking area cast, you know, because we love a snug where we can sit down and have a conversation in a pub.
Mark that now, Dennis.
It's a bit catchier as well.
Yeah. I mean, crammed into a smoking area cast, I might start that on the side. I won't tell anyone about it though. But
the first part is checking HSE compliance of the actual smoking area.
Yeah. But I just think, like, I suppose this is something that I didn't really think about until you guys were, like Janice was explaining exactly that, was I actually think that, like, a lot of pubs will actually have to cater for the type of pub experience that I like anyway, which is me sitting down. No, I know they're talking about not at the bar, but like me sitting down, having a chat with the barman, sitting down with Owen and hopefully you guys soon enough in a pub where we're sitting around the table having a conversation and we're not fucking sitting on each other's laps. And like, you know, it's not uncomfortable. And for me, especially like as someone with arthritis who has mobility issues and seizes up if I'm too foot, like in certain situations, I don't want to be comfortable. So I actually think that my ideal January 2020 pub scenario could be August time. And those pubs on that you said that won't open until July 20th, maybe the August Bank Holiday weekend. Like, I want the mistakes to happen before I'm there. So I'm kind of like pint watch. I was like, yeah, July 20th, probably June 29th, a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, grand. But my personal, like, going to those pubs will be August 9th, August 14th, whenever that is, before I'm comfortable going there, because it all is all about comfort and enjoying it for me. And actually, I found with lockdown and with going to off licenses, and instead of going like as you talked about, Wayne, with the freshness, the kegs and stuff in the southeast, we're very limited. We don't get access to all the breweries around the country because, number one, it's not worth our while pursuing pubs in the southeast because there's only a couple of lines going to breweries in all these pubs, and they're going to give them, if they're going to give them to anyone, they're going to give them to Metalman, and they're going to give them to maybe Costello's or you know, Rascals will get into a couple of places and that, apart from the exceptions like Grady's Yard and Phil Grimes. So for me, it's a bit like, right, fuck it, like, just leave it all go, like, let everyone fuck everything up. And now I have this opportunity over the next 2 months and on over the last 3 months to find out, to drink beer from breweries that I've heard a lot about, that I see a lot, that I like about online. But because I don't drink much at home before COVID, I can now spend my Friday nights on Zooms with randomers like you guys and enjoy beers that I wouldn't otherwise enjoy if we were doing a snowcast in a pub. And it's a bit counterintuitive to me because I fucking adore the pub. But at the same time too, I think with a pub watch, it's like, for most people, it probably is around the August bank holiday weekend when it's going to be a similar experience. I agree with you, Wayne. I think that could be a recipe for fucking disaster.
Yeah, well, I'm only thinking that way for a number of reasons. Like, so many people are not going to be going abroad this year. Those that do
will be unfriended and blocked.
Yeah.
Questionable personal decisions, but each to their own. I think the August bank holiday is just lining up to be that perfect lining up of everyone's fed up. Everyone realizes the pubs are open a couple of weeks. Everyone's going to go down the country somewhere for a staycation. And they'll get a deal somewhere because hotels will do deals or whatever. And I just think it has the potential. I just hope that, like, in the main, compliance individually has been quite good. Like, you don't really see too many stories of really poor compliance, but that's the thing about alcohol. Once you've had a few drinks,
yeah, totally, yeah, out the window. Like,
I think
I won't lie to you though. Like, we're going to go out for a meal tomorrow evening to celebrate everything that happened through all the special occasions that happened through COVID. I am going to welcome the space between the tables because I don't like knowing that, you know, John and Mary beside me can hear my entire conversation and then see and look and be breathing on my food.
Yeah.
I'm going to welcome those partitions and a little bit of, and it's going to feel a little bit more intimate, I think.
Yeah, no, I think you're definitely right. Like, there's definitely like restaurants and stuff in Waterford, like say Burza in Waterford, where like, you know, it's lovely and cozy, but it's the same kind of cozy that like a housing or a real estate agent or whatever would categorize a tiny, tiny house as cozy. Like, you know, it is lovely in that sense, but like, I do also enjoy the person beside me not listening to every single conversation I have. And I know it goes both ways.
I could be talking about them.
Yeah. But like, oftentimes I'm there like throwing eyes at Kira, being like, did you hear that? Did you hear what he just said? Like, you know, but like, you know, I would definitely embrace it as well. Like, I think it's amazing. But actually, Wayne, just to touch on something that you said there about like, say, people or publicans not hiring someone to be on the toilet door or whatever. But like, they also like would have to hire someone. Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult for them to like someone to be on the front door, you know, of the place. And like, so like your local pub where there's just like one barman behind the bar. And like, you know, like, are they going to hire a second person to stand at the door? Or then are they going to put the onus on the barman to be like, oh, here, there's actually 8 in here now. We only have capacity for 6, you know. So who was in there last? Michael, was that you? Clear out, you know. That's going to be very tough. Like, you know, I think it's tough enough being a barman trying to find out who's round as what, like, you know, than having to go like, who, you know, what's going on. Like, yeah,
I actually agree with you there, Owen. That's actually something I didn't even really think of myself. I think like there are different pubs that operate at different scales that be able to pay guys stand at the bar or stand at the door, count people on the way in or stand at the loos. But your smaller pub like Welsh's, for example, prime example, like, are they going to be able to pay a lad 150 quid to stand on the door to count people in and count people out?
Yeah.
Are they going to be able to pay another person what's the minimum wage? 10 quid, 10 something an hour? If they're under 18, it's 8 quid an hour or whatever it is. Are they going to be able to pay someone like to stand in front of the toilet and count in and count out and then clean the place after 20 minutes?
But also to make sure that those people have washed their hands.
Yeah, well, I don't think that they're able to do that, but I think part of the thing is that wash your hands, there'll be signs everywhere. Like, people need to, we're unfortunately
in a, I'll just say, here, I want to smell the hand soap.
I think we're in a world
I actually think you're right, because
get back in there and wash those grubby fuckers.
No, because we had in Waterford, there was a shopping centre that was like refusing people if they didn't use the alcohol gel on the way in, you know. So maybe you are right. Maybe you are like, I suppose there is the whole thing of like, management has the right to refuse whatever admission or refuse entry or is allowed to kick you out. Like, so maybe you are right. Maybe they are
sanitizer when they come out.
Yeah, maybe they are. Like, yeah.
Yeah, but if people at this stage aren't getting the message to wash your fucking hands,
they really aren't
getting the fucking seal.
No,
people are stupid. People are stupid.
That could also be the title of this episode. People are stupid.
Jumped. But no, it'll be interesting to see. I really hope that my Nostradamus-style prediction of doom is incorrect. Yeah. I just hope that, like, I want to get back to the pub and have a couple of pints of Guinness and waiting for Janice to finish work or whatever. But it's unclear. There's like a fog there. I can't see when I would personally feel it would be the safe and right thing for me to do, because my family that are in the vulnerable category, and that's the reality of the situation. I would feel like anyone would probably feel absolutely fucking terrible if you were asymptomatic and you gave it to someone else and they weren't asymptomatic and they got a real bad dose. Like, how could you look at yourself in the mirror knowing that something you had done had contributed to that?
Yeah.
And that's just me. I'll happily drink cans at home on a Friday, Saturday or whatever night. And, you know, I'm realistically saying end of August is probably the first time I'll probably be in a pub properly. After that.
I'm with you, Wayne. Listen, as let's end our podcast on a more positive note anyway, right?
Please.
Give me your best beer of 2019.
2019?
That's the first half of 2020. It doesn't feel like 2020, let's be honest. 2019, first half of 2020. You can't use Ace of Haze.
Motherfucker.
First half of 2020, I'm going with Four Provinces Dark Mild.
Yes, I'd agree with that. Latter half of 2019, God.
Just,
I had some exceptional beers in England.
I have a shocking memory, so I can't think back that far.
I'm pretty sure I had a couple of Cloudwater double IPAs that were absolutely ridiculous. Actually, Track Sonoma on cask in Manchester.
Why don't you just shut the fuck up?
That could be the episode title as well.
Don't you can rely on me.
It's just a rock solid pale ale, 3.8%, but it was more to do with the people I was with at the time and everything like that. It's maybe not the best beer I've had, but it's the beer I enjoyed the most.
But that's a lot of what we experience through beer. It's not the beer that we drink, it's the beer that we drink, it's the people we drink the beer with.
Yeah.
Agreed. 100%.
Mine is going to be the same. It's definitely memory based. I'm not even sure it's going to be the best beer, but like, definitely Super Soaker. It just brings back so many really good memories. Like, I think it was that whole experience of like being like, oh my God, it does taste like a super split, you know? And then just like all those, just, I don't know, just pretty much like drinking the end, like, an entire keg of it out of a place. There was just so many memories of the whole thing. Like,
but I think as well, like the thing that Super Soakers I associate with is the first time we met Finn Dwyer from the Irish History Podcast. We had a 6 cans of Super Soaker on the train up to Kilkenny that day, and it's just a great fucking memory because Finn is an absolute podcast idol for me. Like, and we just went on a lash with him and talked shit and ended up talking about like Rasputin roast beer and fucking Joseph Mary Plunkett on the Raz together, like, you know, and it just ended up being this mad, mad fucking day. Jesus, do you know what? The Virtual Beer Festival is to blame for a lot of this, but I'd give a shout out to, the name of it's gone for me. Is it Teeny Tiny? Is that the name of it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, from Dead Center Brewing. That's a savage beer. That's a savage, savage beer now, if you're talking about sessionable barbecue beers. That stood out to me from the very first virtual beer festival that Janice, you were at that, and Wayne,
I was, yeah.
Wayne was traveling. He wasn't with us.
No, I wasn't.
But I was very good, and I only drank the beer that we had before, and I kept the ones we didn't taste together.
That's true love. That's true love.
Right? And that's the one I brought out the gin in.
Right. I think we're gonna stop recording now, lads, and we'll have a casual can to finish up our session after the recording. But I just want to say, on behalf of myself and Owen, anyway, thanks so much for your time, guys. It's been brilliant, and I cannot wait to do a follow-up podcast in person. Like, it's going to be some crack, whether it's in Lockheed's and Navan or Phil Grinds and Waterford or anywhere in between.
I reckon if we went in with a laptop and a microphone, he'd fucking chase us out with a Zimmer.
Well, no, we have the phone and we have the lapel mics, you see. It's very, we're a bit...
Oh, sorry, you guys are total pros. Yeah. Sorry, I forgot that.
That was the word I was going for. It's exactly that. So I think, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having us. It was great.
Thanks for having us, lads.
Oh, look, this is the thing, and I actually said it to Wayne in private messaging there a couple of weeks ago. I was like, I really want to meet you guys for these pints in person, because, like, I fucking enjoy the podcast, the blog, fucking the social media account so much. Speaking of social media, you can catch Wayne and Janice on at Irish Beer Snob and at Mrs. Beer Snob on the Twitter. Go and follow them. They're great accounts to follow. Really enjoy it. And as well, just from us, I suppose you can get us on the Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Snowcast and all of those. And just to reiterate what we've been saying the last while, like, we have the Patreon if you're interested in that, patreon.com/Snowcast. But most important at this point in time, if you have a few pounds to spare, think about those who are really fucked at this moment in time. There are food banks out there. Like, honest to God, my local Aldi now has a basket for the Waterford Food Bank. And look, fuck it. It doesn't affect my daily living if I spend an extra 10, 15 quid on food to give to the less fortunate, especially at this time after a global pandemic. So if you're in a shop and you can donate to your local food bank, please do. Or if you have a couple of pounds to give to the likes of Barnados or any of those kind of charities, please do at this moment in time, because they need it. And if you don't have those spare few pounds, just be sound anyway. That's not too much to ask for anyone. And enjoy local craft beer, independent brewing. If you're in a pub after lockdown has eased, just fucking ask. Just ask. Is there anything local? And try it. It won't fucking kill you. But we're all about the inclusivity. Owen, any parting word for the listeners?
It won't kill you. The other beer.
There you
use
go.
Hand beer. Sanitizer.
Not using hand sanitizer will kill you.
Yeah.
Drinking independent craft beer will not kill you.
Yeah, Don Draper of the advertising world right there.
There you go. Lads, that's been this week's Snowcast. It's been a fucking pleasure. I've really enjoyed this one, Owen. And we're driving. Sláinte, lads. This is the big fucking thing that I miss about pre fucking COVID, is the podcast hasn't had a clean.
they've just ruined it.
I was just going to say, we haven't had a glass clink in fucking ages. Go on, lads, you're in the same room. Louder.
Don't break me glass.
Yeah, there we go. Listen, lads, Sláinte, take care and stay away from yourselves.
Yeah.